It can happen to you if you're young at heart. For it's hard, you will find, to be narrow of mind if you're young at heart. You can go to extremes with impossible schemes. You can laugh till your dreams fall apart at the seams. And life gets more exciting with each passing day. And love is either in your heart or on its way. Don't you know that it's worth every treasure on earth when you're young? Oh, it's hard, you will find, to be narrow of mind when you're young at heart. And if you should survive to 105, look at all you'll derive out of being alive. And here's the best part, you'll have a head start if you are among the very young at heart.
Good evening and welcome to Older Women Live on CKUT 90.3 FM. We are by, for, and about older women, and we come to you every second Wednesday of the month from 6 to 7 p.m. I'm Laura Yaros. I'll be your host today. Our first story today is a little bit of an update on the situation at Mont Carmel, a private seniors residence that's been in the news a lot over the last year, when a new owner took over and wanted to change the vocation of the building and make it into a regular apartment building. And that has been very, very disruptive for the older residents who have been there, some of them for many years. So we have Constance Vaudrin from the Comité Mont Carmel, whom I spoke to today, and she gave us an update on the situation.
Thank you very much, Laura, for having me on your program. It's very important to us for that you help us to spread the news, whether they're good or bad, and it makes people aware of the problem that we go through. And not only us at Mont Carmel, but also so many other people, in Quebec and other places as well, that the question of housing for elders is most important. And it's actually not taken care of by governments or it's really left out. So we're very happy to be able to communicate that with you. Okay. Since we talked, there were other things. I mean, I don't know if you were aware that we were with the Superior Court, and our landlord, our owner, decided that it was not the right court to be in to solve our put our things and forward. And so he went into an appeal because that was Superior Court had decided that they were the right court. But the owner went into appel,
Yeah, an appeal. He
in
appealed.
appeal, that's right, in appeal, and he won. So we went to the tribunal. Now we are at the tribunal, which is okay. There's no problem with that. And we can always go back to Superior Court eventually if there is need, for special things. So we're at the tribunal, and well, we did a few things at the tribunal, but we were expecting, actually, we had dates at the tribunal for May and July to deal with the main problem, that the owner had signed a sales deed that said that this place should remain a certified residence for elders with the services. And then 3 weeks after, he sent us an eviction notice. And which, I mean, woof, we just couldn't believe it, because his letter said before, sending the notice, he said that, well, I am the owner, new owner, and I want to offer you the best, and if you want to stay with us, you are very welcome. Life will be pleasant, and na. But then we got an eviction notice, as you know. So this was quite a shock to us. Obviously, I had an eviction notice. I mean, you take that very seriously, and
No
this is what
kidding.
made us get together and do something about it, and protest. So we went to the tribunal at the beginning, and we went to Superior Court for other things, and now we are back there at the tribunal, which is okay. So now we were awaiting for this date to happen. We had a date in May and another one in July. That was 4 days. And now, which this new situation here, which the owner sent us a very, very nice letter, actually, on the 12th of March, saying that, well, they have decided that they will keep the RPA, the certified residence with the services, and offer the same services as in the past years, which we keep. What does that mean, really? And he says that our preoccupations, their preoccupations, with evaluating the whole of our dossier, makes us think that this is the reason why we changed, made this decision. So we feel that it is essential to maintain the services for your well-being, your quality of life, and assure you that our team will be fully committed to continue to give you the integrality of services adapted to your needs in the respect of your comfort and of your security. Isn't that beautiful?
Shall I cue the orchestra now?
Yeah, well, yeah, exactly. Please do so, and you will applaud. But I mean, that means that, when you receive that, you say, wow, this is going backwards quite a lot. He is going backwards. And what's the idea behind that? Because since we were to have a hearing regarding the main point, what you call litigation, okay? The main litigation, I mean, we were well, we were hoping that things would give us, so he dropped all that. This is all finished now. We're not going to court for that. The dates are finished, they're closed. So we are facing this now, and we find ourselves in front of, it is a victory in a way, because we've been fighting for that, these 2 points, maintaining the services, and keeping the this is the RPA, the with the services, and also eviction notices will not happen anymore. These are the 2 points that he mentions now. He has gone backwards on these. But we're wondering, we're just
Did
saying,
he implement any of these promises?
Well, this is it. I mean, this is it. I mean, what does he mean by maintaining the same level of services as in the past years, which were services were so and so? You know, some things had improved, but others, I mean, you know, it's just no, there was little services, in fact, and especially regarding security. I mean, security here is non-existent in the sense that, you know, we have part of our of the population in this building is residents, as we are the elders, who some of them we are. There are 47 of us who are in court who struggle for our rights, and the other ones, the other elders, well, they decided to sign a new deal with a new lease with the owner, which means that they don't benefit from the services, you know, of a certified residence. But I mean, we're including them in everything. They're invited to our activities and all that, of course. This means that you know, the building is full of there are refugee claimants for most of them. They're in majority in the building at the moment because when they come, they take and the apartment that are being freed by people are people that go away, big for some reason or other, because question of health, question they die or they. You know, when an apartment is free, well, they give it to those people. They refuse to have people on over 65. They absolutely do. So, I mean, this means what you see what that means for us. So, I don't know what they're hoping for. I think they're going to, they know that we're not young people and, you know, they're based, I
So they're
think.
waiting for all of you to leave in
That's
one
what they.
way or another, and then they can just take
Exactly.
over the whole place.
But I mean, even then, I mean, we're all elderly, you know. But I mean, we won't give up. I mean, we're very determined, and with the help of everybody outside, we get tremendous support, tremendous. And the media is with us, absolutely. You know, when we got this news from the owner, that was on the 14th, 12th of March. Well, the next day or 2 days after, we sent a communique to the press. And the next day, the very Tuesday, I think, we got tremendous demands. I mean, I did six interviews in one day,
Wow.
and others as well. They did the same, you know, and it went on. And now with you, it goes on. And it's fantastic because, as I said, you know, it means that it's spreading out, and people understand that we are working for Mont Carmel, but also to change laws, to change, you know, the mentality of there, with the leaders, the political leaders, because they say they're very much preoccupied with the question of elder people. But I mean, what concretely? No, concretely, they are more at the service of the owners, and it's quite tangible, you know.
Because I read somewhere recently that he promised to keep the services, but already a lot of them have been taken away, and I don't think that they've been reinstated, right?
Well, the service the worst actually is security. Security, there's cleanliness, and because of course we have a new population here, a population that comes without directly from their country, mostly Mexicans, and they come from their country with their youth. They don't know anything how it works here, and the people, the person, the manager who welcomes them. That doesn't tell them what this place is about. They surely don't want to tell them that they're elder people, older people here. So they don't tell us how to use various, you know, washing machines or things like that, or trash bins or recycling and all that. So it makes, you know, there's a lot of problem coming with that. I mean, we have good relation with them. Personally, I can speak Spanish, so I meet them in the elevator and we talk and, you know, and hoping that they will learn French and all that. But our relation is good, except when at night their music is very, very loud. They keep until morning, you know, early morning. So it's impossible. I mean, it doesn't suit And they're all mixed up with us. I mean, on my floor, there are 15 apartments, and there are only two of us. The other ones are two. All the apartments are with these people. So
it's like, so it makes it disruptive.
So we call the police. There's the only way to do it. And sometimes we've had a lot of very important problems in the past few weeks. You know, a few weeks ago, there was prostitution, there was drug dealers, there were, you know, so these kind of things, you know, you don't want that in a old people's home, in a senior's home, do you?
You don't want it anywhere.
Anywhere.
Actually, yeah, drug dealing and that kind of thing, I don't think is desirable in any residential area.
No. And the thing is that, you know, the front door, the main entrance, there's only one entrance here. The main entrance is open. People come and go. People come and go all day.
So there used to be security.
There used to be security at the before the person at the reception desk. Everybody that came in, she either knew them, or if she didn't know them, she would stop them and say, okay, can I help you? Where are you going? And okay, you want to see that person? I'll call her, okay, or him, which doesn't happen anymore. So anybody comes in. Some people don't belong here. They wait for somebody to come in with their key, and then they follow, and they just go up the elevator. So anybody can come in, which is not secure. It really is not secure.
No.
So this is one of the main things. So if the owner is serious about giving us the services, well, there will be concrete gestures accompanying that, but it's written down, you know. So this is where we are at the moment.
So he legally bound to follow what he wrote in this letter? Is there some place you can complain and say, this is what he wrote, but it's not being implemented?
Well, what we do, obviously, I mean, everything we gain here is because we demand and we struggle to get it. There was never a gift, you know, or a present given to us, never.
I doubt
so,
it.
We have to complain to the manager, and we go every so-and-so every week or every 2 weeks, whatever there are problems. I mean, we write them down, we send them by email to the manager, and then we get together, we see him, and then we discuss the points. And well, he does things. I mean, obviously, he goes himself sometime to knock at the door and say, if you don't stop the noise, I mean, you know, we're going to send you away, stop it, you know. But very often people don't care. And I've been a witness to that on my floor. And at night, I went at 2 o'clock in the morning, knocking at a door saying, stop it. You know, so this is a little bit life. On some other floors, it's worse than others, you know, because there are also babies, young children. This is not a place for children. I mean, they don't have any place to go. And we're on the street. I mean, we don't have a garden, so they cannot play around or anything. So they run in the corridors. And this is it. So this is another thing. But this, I understand them. I can understand they need to move, these young people, you know,
of course,
these children.
Yeah.
But I mean, this is the situation. This is it. So now what we're
so
expecting.
You're kind of in limbo now, is that it?
We're in limbo, yeah. We're in limbo. And what is coming up at the moment, we have some things, you know, in court. We have claim for damages, what has been deposited some time ago. And so we don't have a date for that. But we are actually waiting for a judgment, which is on contempt of court that we put through a long time ago in July. There was an audience for 4 days, I think, with witnesses and everything. And we are still waiting for the judgment. So we wonder, my gosh, I mean, it's so long, you know. But I mean, there's not much we can do about it. We have to wait. They have problems, I think, in court, the lack of personnel and all the rest. And I don't know if that's the reason or what. So we're waiting then. And yeah, this is it. Well, what is interesting, as I said, you know, is that we send everything to the press, you know, media, so they can help us to it puts pressure on the owner. You know, when he doesn't like how would I say, the way we talk about him, you know, it
Yeah, he
puts him a
doesn't like
bad
the bad
image.
press.
No, indeed. But I mean, there's nothing else we can do. We have to
So you're
tie up.
waiting for the judgment of the court regarding damages and so on, and then you'll see what the next step is.
Well,
Because you know
the one of
the way it was written, whatever I saw was kind of like, oh, well, you had this victory, you know, but it looked like it was kind of temporary, and also that the services hadn't really been completely restored.
This is it. That's why it is a victory in a way that we've been fighting for that for the past 2 years. These 2 points, you know, that I mentioned. But I mean, it's not a victory in a sense. It's a very small victory because things haven't changed very much here. So in that way, even in spite of the nice words and the letters, I mean, it doesn't, you know, mean anything to us at the moment. Nothing has changed, you know.
Yeah.
So,
So we still need
but
to do whatever we can to support you all. Is there any like website or anything that people can look at and try to find ways to help you?
indeed, well, I mean, help in the sense of understand what's happening, get news, you know, and if we go to court, well, some people are interested, well, they can come. You know, we like people to come, and we invite people to come to court with us, and they always give us the biggest room, you know, because we have more people than any other appeal. Yes, there is on Facebook. It's Sauvons Mont Carmel, and there you will get all the news and whatever activities, you know, that would need support.
So I'd like to just thank you so much for your time and wish you good luck with it. I hope that the judgment will work in your favor, and if you get a good judgment, then it means he's going to be forced to do more things to restore the services that he took away. I mean, that's really what I think this is all about, and you know, to continue the vocation of the building. So anyway, all the good luck in the world, and I really appreciate your time. So thank you so much, and we'll keep in touch. Thank
Okay,
you.
thank you, Laura. You're very kind, really, to spread the news, and the work you do is fantastic, really. So thank you
Well,
so much.
thank you very much. It's very important. All right, thank you. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye now.
I have dreamed on this mountain since first I was my mother's daughter, and you can't just take my dreams away. And now with me watching, you may drive a big machine, but I was born a great big woman, and you can't just take my dreams away without me fighting. It's so raised my many daughters, some died young, some are still living. If you come here for the taking our mountain, well, we ain't come here to give it. I have dreamed on this mountain since first I was my mother's daughter, and you can't just take my dreams away. And now with me watching, no, you can't just take my dreams away without me fighting. No, you can't just take my dreams away.
And that song was by Holly Nears called The Mountain Song. Kind of a similar situation to Mont Carmel, where an older woman is having her land and house expropriated, and she's just going to stick there and fight and not let it happen. Before that, you were listening to an interview with Constance Vaudrin from the Comité Mont Carmel about the latest happenings with their situation. Older Women Live would like to thank Constance Vaudrin for her time. And if you'd like to support the residents of Mont Carmel, you can check out their Facebook page at Sauvons Mont Carmel. So that's Sauvons, and then Mont, Mont, Carmel. Check out on Facebook. They have all the latest news and activities and actions that they're taking. If you'd like to contact the committee directly and volunteer your services in some way, they can get back to you. Email the following address, Info Comité. So that's INFOCOMITE dot Mont Carmel, all one word, MONTCARMEL at gmail.com. That's infocomite.montcarmel@gmail.com. And in case you've just joined us or have perhaps forgotten, let me remind you that you're listening to CKUT 90.3. This is Older Women Live. The next segment of our show features our sister collective member, Brizna Kashach-Rowe, who recorded a series of three interviews with women activists in Guatemala and the way that they're working to change things, each in their own separate way. So we're going to hear a little bit more from Sandra Moran, a former member of parliament, and what she's working on now. She's been an activist for many years, also a musician and drummer. And then another woman, a sociologist, and about the situation of the percentages of women occupying major functions and other structures. The third woman works against the mining companies who are coming into not just Guatemala, but other countries and expropriating land and committing a lot of human rights violations. So here is Brizna to introduce and discuss these important issues with the women activists from Guatemala.
We are inspired by women who stand up, make their voices heard, and fight against the patriarchal domination prevalent in our societies. In Guatemala, where I come from, to be a feminist woman means to fight for minority groups and women's rights, for justice and peace, against corruption and impunity, and for the construction of true democracy. For our show tonight, I would like to share with you women activists' voices who focus their work on defending rights of minority groups in different ways. The first is a feminist, political activist, and former deputy of the Congress of Guatemala, Sandra Moran, who works in preparing women to fully participate in all areas to build a more inclusive world. Our second guest is a human rights activist, president of the National Union of Guatemalan Women, UNAMG, and coordinator of the Gender Program for Impunity Watch, Brizna Karina Kashach Alvarez, who works with women who were victims of crimes against humanity in Guatemala. And our third participant is Jackie McVicker, a Canadian human rights activist who concentrates on mining companies. Sandra and Brizna Karina left Guatemala and came to Canada as political refugees. However, they went back to continue their work in Guatemala.
We would like to welcome Sandra Moran to our show in celebration of International Women's Day. She's a Guatemalan feminist, a political activist, an artist, a writer, and former congressional deputy in Guatemala. Sandra, thank you for joining us today. We have had you before on our show, but to give listeners who may not know you the opportunity, can you please tell us about yourself and your work?
Thank you, Brizna. Thank you very much. Okay, I am from Guatemala. I live in Guatemala. I've been here working as part of the social movement, feminist movement. Right now, I'm the coordinator of an international organizing feminist school. That is a school in the international level for members of the World March of Women and other alliances that are in United States and also in different parts of the continent, America's continent. Yeah, I'm working there doing preparing the school and developing the curricula. And yeah, that's a beautiful work that I'm doing right now.
I saw that you wrote a book, and I would like to ask you, what prompted you to write your book? It was worth it, articulating politics with social struggles from the Congress of the Republic.
Well, actually, the work that we did was with Tania Palencia. She's a very well-known leader in Guatemala, and actually she was my first leader because she was part of the students' organization 1972. I joined the school, high school, you know, at that time, and she was the leader of the students there. And I always said to her that from her leadership, I started being part of the social movement since that time. Then it was a great moment and a process that we started doing it in November 2019. We started the writing the book. And the idea is, people always told me that was my experience was very good and probably will be good, that I can write a book to share the experience. Well, that's the book. The book is not telling how I did, well, yes, some how I did my work, but also reflection, political reflections. The idea is that the book can be useful for learning and knowing how is to be a deputy in Guatemala, and all the things that we need to be prepared for, you know? And I'm hoping that can be useful for other women or other people who wants to be part to the electoral process, and also to go and work in the government and in the Congress.
Thank you very much, Sandra. We have Sandra participating in our February 2024 show, and she talked about her work encouraging people to elect an anti-corruption government. And it was a great success because this government was elected with about 60% of the electoral vote. She also shared with us her work as a poet, as a musician, and as a writer. And we know that now, more than ever, she's concentrating on trying to train and to get more feminists involved. Because at this point, even though we have a new government, an anti-corruption government, and that he has good intentions, as feminists, we have to continue our work to build a true democracy. So thank you very much, Sandra.
We now welcome Brisna Karina and ask her to join us. Thank you for participating with us today. We know that you have a very busy schedule. Brisna Karina, can you please tell us about yourself and your work?
Well, first of all, I'd like to thank you for having me and inviting me to join you in this conversation. It's a pleasure to join and share my thoughts with you and with the audience. I'd like to start saying that professionally, I'm a sociologist and I graduated from the University of San Carlos in Guatemala. And I also have a diploma on gender studies from the University Rafael Landívar. I have been participating in UNAMG, the National Union for Women in Guatemala, for more than 20 years now. And this organization is one of the eldest women's organization in Guatemala. Precisely this week, we arrive at our 41st anniversary. So I'm glad to be part of this organization that focuses on empowering women, diverse women, and also the consolidation of peace. I have also professionally worked in research or development programs that focus on women's rights and indigenous people. And for the past years, I have been focusing on transitional justice and particularly sexual violence during the armed conflict. Through my work, I've supported victims organizations, prioritizing the strengthening of women's leadership in these organizations. As you know, in Guatemala, the armed conflict lasted 36 years. And even though it's been 24 years since the peace agreements were signed, there's still a lot to be done in this area.
Thank you very much, Brisnita. Guatemala is a patriarchal society, one of unequal power relations based on gender, where men dominate the economic, social, political, legal, cultural, and religious spaces. And you also mentioned about the internal armed conflict in Guatemala. Given all of those difficulties, do you think that it is possible for women's struggles to advance? And could you tell us if those advances have occurred and how they have occurred?
Yes, even though there's a lot to be done, I do think that there have been important advancements in terms of women's rights, and particularly in two areas. One is in terms of the political participation of women, and also in the creation of laws and legal instruments. In terms of the participation of women, we do see an increase of them participating in different spaces, particularly linked to the peace process or at the community level, but also in different areas and within the state. The justice sector particularly is one of the areas where there has been significant increase of women. In 2020, 47% of judges and magistrates were women. And for example, in the general prosecutor's office, 40% of the workers were women. And we've had three women as general prosecutors consecutively. So we do see this presence of women in important roles and in the justice sector particularly. In other areas, it's lower. For example, within the police, 27% are women, whereas in Congress, 19% are women. Even though this is the legislature that has had more women, it is still quite low in comparison to other areas. Women participating as heads of ministries is quite lower because that depends more on the designation of the president. And so there we see more difficulties. But in areas where there's an election process or where there is an involvement in terms of their qualifications, then we see a bit of more women participating in these spaces. Now, this doesn't necessarily mean that they are occupying higher power positions or that even their presence guarantees a gender lens or an improvement of women's rights within those spaces. And the police is a clear example of this. I mean, we see more women participating within the police, but the institution is still a very masculine, patriarchal, and violent institution. The other area where I was mentioning that there is an advancement is in the creation of policies, instruments that are more linked to care attention models or action protocols, training processes to help improve the protection of women and the punishment of violence against them. We can mention, for example, the creation of the National Action Plan to implement the Resolution 1325 on Women, Peace, and Security from the United Nations. Also the National Plan for the Prevention and Eradication of Family Violence Against Women for 2019-2029. And there was also a public policy against sexual violence in Guatemala 2019-2029. Now, the challenge here is the implementation of these instruments. I think Guatemala is one of the countries in the region with the most laws and instruments that recognize and protect women's rights, but we don't necessarily see these instruments being implemented by all the institutions, or not all state workers know them deeply to be able to implement them. So there is still a challenge there in terms of the best implementation of these instruments. And also the situation of violence against women is quite high. It's quite big that the state also has a limited capacity to be able to respond adequately. So not all women reach justice or any support in these sections. Also in transitional justice, there has been important trials that show the use of sexual violence as a weapon of war, that are war crimes or crimes against humanity. And we can mention here two cases during the recent years, the Molina Tyson case, and also the Dos Erres massacre case, and also the confirmation of the Sepulsarco case sentence. All of these cases included acts of sexual violence and violence against women. So this is important that these trials reached a condemning sentence. But there's other cases that are facing difficulties. For example, the Achi women's case, there have been significant setbacks in the justice process. The judge that was presiding that case decided that there was not enough evidence against the six self-defense patrollers that were accused to send them to trial, so she set them free. This shows that she completely ignored the testimony of the women by saying that there's not enough evidence when their testimony was or should have been sufficient evidence to say that they needed to be sent to trial. And this judge also showed racist treatment towards the women during the preliminary hearings, but fortunately the women were able to demand another judge see their case, and now the case has been transferred to another judge. Another patroller has been detained and went through the preliminary hearings, and this patroller is now set to face trial in 2022. So we see certain advancements, but then also certain setbacks or challenges that still need to be faced.
Thank you very much, Brisna, Karina. So I have a question, because you mentioned about the Achi case, in which, if I am not wrong, the judge was Claudette Dominguez, and she completely ignored the evidence, as you mentioned, and set the accused people free. So, and she was a woman. So what do you think it's necessary for people that are in those important positions really conduct themselves and respect women's rights, and also in indigenous people's rights, and in general, minority groups' rights?
This is an example of how just by being a woman, it doesn't necessarily mean that they will have a gender perspective or an understanding of the situation that different women can face. I mean, we know that the patriarchal system is not just implemented or moved, it doesn't move forward just because of the attitudes and actions of men, but as a society as a whole that includes women. I think that in this case, two things are needed. One is that these judges need to be trained in dealing with cases such as sexual violence as a weapon of war. Now, this is a judge that is in the higher risk courts. Supposedly, these courts see cases that are difficult, they present a high risk in terms of security issues, or that the accused might escape. So in these courts, cases that are linked to the armed conflict are seen. There are also cases linked to organized crime or corruption or narco activity related cases. So they are like big profile cases. So the judges that are in these courts need to be trained in dealing with these types of cases, because a lot of times these are cases that don't include one victim and one perpetrator, but that include many victims and many perpetrators, or that include networks or groups or the state in this case when speaking of conflict related cases. And the other thing is that there are international protocols and standards on how to deal with victims of sexual violence. And one of those standards is that the woman's testimony itself is evidence enough. You don't need to have a clinical exam to prove if there was sexual violence, but the testimony itself. And these standards also explain how it's very difficult for a woman to make it up, that it's not a lie, and the stigma also that is included when we speak of sexual violence. So that training and that knowledge of dealing with these cases is very important. But the other thing in Guatemala, for example, is that we need independent judges. We see a lot of influence that military sectors or the economic elite have put pressure on certain judges. And Claudette Dominguez is a judge that is linked to military sectors. This is not the first case in which she rejects evidence. Also, she also presided that Creon Paz case, where she rejected case evidence from different victims and testimonies, as well as not allowing other victims to be included as accusing the perpetrators. So yeah, we also need to guarantee that the judges are independent, that they don't respond to any other particular interest outside the justice system, or that are inclined to certain points of view, but that focus on evidence, that focus on the law, and the focus on the rights of victims.
Thank you, Rizna. Karina? I agree with you that we had great achievements in transitional justice in Guatemala, thanks to the participation of many conscient and honorable women and men that unfortunately now have gone into exile because of criminal persecution by criminal and corrupt elites that still have co-opted the justice system. So that is to confirm that we agree with you that we need independent judges, independent workers or members of the justice system that are not pressured by corruption, not like Consuelo Porras, which is the current attorney general, that unfortunately she is being in her position for 2 periods during the government of Jimmy Morales from 2016 to 2020, and also during the government of Alejandro Giammattei from 2020 to 2024. Now that we have a government that is against corruption, and this government took office in January 14, 2024, and he has offered to bring back all these very professional people that have been unfairly criminalized. And this is just to emphasize the fact that as feminists, we need to continue working on our job to support people and defend human rights for all. Our next guest is Jackie McVicker. So let's welcome her to our show.
Hi, Brisna. Thank you very much for the opportunity to connect with your show and your listeners. About this issue, it's an issue that is really important but doesn't often get a lot of media attention, so I really appreciate the time that you're putting into this. I think it's really important for us to think about Canada's role in extractivism around the world, and how Canadian foreign policy around economic investment in different countries is really modeled on a framework of extractivism, on mining. You know, this week as COP26 is taking place in Glasgow, fossil fuel divestment seems like a no-brainer at this point, and investing in fossil fuels definitely is not a path towards any kind of sustainable future. And often I think mining gets overlooked in terms of the role of mining in perpetuating environmental harm, as well as severe human rights violations around the world and in Canada. This, you know, Canada is a world leader when it comes to mining, in big part because of the role our governments play in pushing this extractive agenda forward. It's often tied to other types of development, type of aid. Canada has had a huge role even in rewriting mining laws in other countries to make it easier for Canadian and other foreign companies to come in with very low standards in terms of human rights and in terms of standards for environmental protection, and even in terms of the types of royalties or what could be seen as opportunities, economic opportunities on the ground. In Guatemala, there's story after story after story of how communities have become divided because of mining. There's also so many experiences of homes cracking and falling apart, wells drying up, water contamination of the few water sources that there are in a community, which obviously mining waste is a huge issue for communities left to deal with the consequences of that harm and that potential harm of tailings pond waste and other toxins in their watersheds. I think that most Canadians are not aware of how Canadian mining companies are operating, that the role of the Canadian government has been to open the doors for this type of investment. And really, the Canadian government has time and time again refused to enact any kind of legislation in Canada to ensure that Canadian companies abroad would be held responsible for any type of harm, whether that be environmental harm or human rights violations. Like the cases that we've seen in Guatemala are like murders directly tied to mine security. In other cases, people being shot who have voiced their opposition. In other cases where there's been gang rapes and other very, very serious human rights violations being committed. There's no way to bring those companies into account, make them responsible, bring any court kind of justice. For now, it's a very slow process. If there's a few cases that have made it to Canadian courts, these are civil suit, so no one's being held criminally responsible yet in Canada for crimes they're committing overseas. And in places like Guatemala, where our corruption is rampant, and the mining companies know that, and so they kind of operate under that understanding that you can kind of do whatever you want if you know who to buy off, who to influence. And so I think Canadian companies, the Canadian government, are accomplices in this corruption. They're accomplices in order to push forward this model that is widely rejected in Guatemala. A few years ago, there was a survey, and you know, over 60% of all Guatemalans were against mining, because they saw no benefit that it would bring, and they were worried about the negative consequences. Right now, in Guatemala, there's a huge conflict taking place. It's around a nickel mine, which has been ordered to stop by the highest court in Guatemala due to lack of consultation with the affected indigenous communities around that mine. The company has refused. There's now a state of siege. People are being arbitrarily arrested. People have had their homes broken into that are part of the resistance movement. And so although that mine right now is owned by a Swiss company, this is the legacy of Canadian mining. This is a landmark mine, a nickel mine that was once owned by Inco and later by Sky and Sky Resources and Hudbay Minerals, and then was sold to the Swiss company. But this is kind of this legacy of a Canadian company coming in to an area, the affected community saying, we don't want you here. The Canadian company working in collusion with the Ministry of the Environment in order to push forward the project at any cost. You know, 15 years later, we're seeing the consequences still of what a mine being implemented without the consent of the communities look like. So there have been decades of resistance, and the communities are still not being listened to, and violence and destruction and death are still the norm for those communities. And most, you know, when you talk to folks, they're just like, we just want to live in peace. You know, we just want the mine to go away. People don't want to spend their days having to fight a Canadian mine or any mine. And so when they have to put all their energy into just survival, it's tiring.
Thank you very much, Jackie, for sharing with us your work. The situation you talked about and the stage of siege you are referring to occurred during the last months of 2021, while Alejandro Giammattei was the president of Guatemala. Now, in March 2024, that we have a new government, an anti-corruption government, and a government that has promised to take into consideration indigenous people's input and opinions, we wish not to have these problems anymore. However, because the Constitutional Court continues under the direction of Consuelo Porras, a corrupt attorney general who does everything to serve the interests of the corrupt, on March the 6th in the morning, Angelica Chok's home was raided. Angelica Chok is a human rights activist, defender of the Quechí territory. And at this point, her house was raided not only by members of the Constitutional Court, meaning the public ministry, but also national police. These situations only tell us that the work of feminists must continue to assure that someday we will have a world, a country, a society, a place where the human rights of everyone are respected. I mean, women's rights, minority groups are respected. So let's continue following this quotation. We ignore our height until we stand up and defend our rights. We all have to stand up and defend our rights.
Well, we had a packed show today, and we've come to the end of our time. So I'd like to remind you that you've been listening to Older Women Live on CKUT 90.3. I'm Laura Yaris. I've been your host today. I'd like to thank very much again Brizna Kashach-Rowe for her fabulous contributions about Guatemalan feminist women, and also Constance Vaudrin from the Comité Mont Carmel to give us an update on the latest situation of that seniors' residence. It's going to have important impacts for all of us older women. We're going to leave you now with a song. We're going to leave you now with Linda Hirschhorn and her song called Miriam's Slow Snake Dance by the Riverside. And this commemorates the time when the Israelites escaped Egypt from slavery and fled towards their freedom. Passover is coming up in about 12 days, so I'd like to wish all those who observe Passover a very happy Passover, and we'll see you next month on the second Wednesday. Take care, everyone.
And Miriam, the prophetess, took the timbrel in her hand and led the women down to the sea. And there they danced, and they sang Shir Ladonai, a song of thanks for this day of liberation. La 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 la.